Hello, my name's Paul Kleinerman. I'm a professor at Oxford, and I'm the host of this podcast on immunology called To Immunity and Beyond. So this is just to say that what we're putting forward with the podcast is a scientific discussion, and it's really just for information, and it isn't in any way medical advice. So if it's medical advice you're after, please go and talk to your doctor or some other medical professional. Meanwhile, enjoy the podcast. Hello, and welcome to another edition of To Immunity and Beyond. And today I've got with me Yang Hu, and Yang is going to introduce himself now.
Okay, thank you to have me here, and I'm a postdoc on computational pathology at the Big Data Institute of Oxford, and I'm working with Professor Jens Richards. In our group, we basically do some pathology image analyzing and a little bit part of endoscopy analyzing, and to try to understand using AI power to understand something of the mechanism or of the disease progression of the cancer.
Great, thanks. So, and thanks for getting in touch. So, we're always looking for volunteers to talk, and I really appreciate it. And your paper is out in April, so that's It's very recent. So it's fantastic, and it's about self-interactive learning. So it's a long title. The paper will be available to everybody on the podcast. We'll share the link. But perhaps before we start on the details of the paper, you can explain to us a little bit about your background and how you've come from your background in computing to address this particular question.
Yeah, so basically we, in our group, that most of people are working at medical image analyzing, at most of people are coming from the background of the computer science and the artificial intelligence. And so basically the task we are going to accomplish is that to using AI to understanding the pathology images and help the pathologist to explore some new mechanism which haven't been discovered yet to help us have a better understanding of the cancer or some chronic disease. So specifically for this paper, we are going to solve the question that is, how is the pathology images can help us to do some molecular subtyping problems. So molecular subtyping problem is that, for example, when we would like to decide how to make a treatment for different patients in cancer, we need to figure out what kind of specific subtype of this patient it is, so that we can provide the precision treatment plan for them, and so that to improve their survival rate. But usually the subtyping actually is rely on that the golden standard is rely on the gene expression test, and that is quite expensive. So it's not really realistic to do that for everyone. So we would like to think about, if we can use the digital pathology images to help us training a model and can automatically do that from the perspective of the image analyzing part.
Great. So does it, and you've tested four different types of cancer here.
Yeah.
But does it generally work like this in the clinic, that the pathologist would, if they didn't have the molecular diagnostics with them, they would make some essentially estimate of which of the molecular subtypes it was more likely to be based on the appearance of the cancer?
Yeah.
And is that the case then?
Yeah, that's the case. So, anyways, for training an AI model, we always have some collected cohort to collect the cohort with the annotation about specific subtype is already be labeled by the pathologist. But the problem we are facing in this paper is that because the annotation and the data collection of the in clinical side is quite expensive, so usually we invest a lot of money. We just collect a very tiny cohort, and that means that's conflict to the demand of the AI model, because usually when we are trying to train an AI model, we we rely on a very big cohort training it. So we need a very data efficient mechanism or algorithm to efficiently leverage those kind of small cohort to do that. Yeah, that's the main problem we need to throw in that in this paper.
So for people who haven't yet read the paper and are just trying to understand the overall approach, so fundamentally you're going to take samples that are taken at surgery or at biopsy and are just are presented on a slide and a conventional clinical slide. That's the initial template of what you're given. Is that right?
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. So I should introduce some fundamental workflow of the whole pipeline. So usually when we do the biopsy from the patient and we got the biopsy and we scan it to make it digitalized which can make us sharing and reviewing them in the computer side. And then we can program in some AI model to try to using the medical imaging analyzing algorithm to deal with that. So that's the basic pipeline we are going to get through. But the problem is the whole slide image, usually they are super big. Usually for each slide, usually they will have the 2 or 3 gigabytes. So that means we cannot deal with that directly with the computer, with the GPU we have or computer we have. So we have to split the whole slide into many, many small patches and extract the feature for each patches. Then we just send it to another kind of the AI model based on the neural network to training that part of small neural network, then give us the prediction result. So that's a basic pipeline of the whole approach.
Okay, so you're as I understand it, and this is how it's laid out in the paper. You break the bigger image up into
smaller tiles,
and then you're analyzing the patterns within each tile, and also you have higher order patterns that between the tiles as well.
Yeah.
And what struck me as really interesting was you're also looking at not just the patterns of how cells are aggregated, but also within the cell as cytopathic features within a cell. So you're looking at all sorts of different scales.
Yeah,
Maybe you could explain it a little bit in a bit more detail how you did that.
Yeah, so the problem we are facing is that as we just separated the whole slice image into small patches, right? That means we are facing two scale of features. One scale is on the tile level. That means the very fine-grained cellular level features. Another scale is on the whole slide level. That means overall morphological level feature scales. So the problem is the original algorithm don't have any communication mechanism between these two scale of features. So in this paper that just proposed a communication mechanism can help these two scale of features can communicate with each other so that they can optimize each other further.
Okay, great. So then you're going to integrate all these separate pieces of information that are telling you something about the piece of tissue that's been taken.
Yeah.
And then how is that information then integrated to give you a sort of answer to your question of what sort of cancer you're looking at and what sort of processes are going on?
Yeah. So once we got the optimized features from the tile level, and we will feed it to the slide level aggregate. And the aggregator, we are using a kind of attention mechanism to indicate which area is more important to help us output the prediction result. So that means the other areas we just assume is not so important for the specific task. So then the attention mechanism can help us can give us the result about, maybe this part of area is very important for giving us the final prediction result. So usually if we just expect that area will be the tumor area, but sometimes it will also contain some stromal area surrounding the tumor. That means that means the stromal area also supports the growing up of the tumor, right? So we will ask the pathology to looking at few of the attention map and to ask them if that makes sense. And we did that, and most of the result, the pathologist think is quite makes sense to them.
Okay, so the pathologist has had years and years of training to become expert at essentially identifying patterns.
Yeah.
And your machine learning has taught itself the same thing through your programming. And that this was a challenge for me to look at all the programming elements in the paper, but you've essentially you've designed a toolkit for it to kind of self-learn from data sets.
Yeah.
So once you got these answers and you say, well, this pattern looks like this and this one looks like that. So in terms of the cancer, you're looking for KRAS cancers in the colon, you're looking at particular types of breast tumor. How do you, I think as a, just a general question, how do you test whether it's doing what you think it's doing and you're not just sort of modeling it on itself? So you have validation and how does that actually work? And tell us how well validated your approach is then.
So basically, we also consider that problems to avoid the observation is just a reflex on overfitting problem. We just separated the one cohort into two parts. One is for training. Another part is for about 20% is for testing. And so we just training the model on the training set about 80% and testing on the another 20% of testing data set, and we do 5 flawed testing, which means we pick up the 80% of for training 80% for training data set 5 times and differently, so that we can calculate the average performance finally. And we also do some external validation. That means we only train the model on one cohort and test it on completely different another cohort. So that validates the performance of our algorithm.
So I sort of got some general questions about the approach, because I've sort of seen similar things going on with inflammatory disease. And one of the problems there was everybody's slides were just slightly different. So they're all H&E, so you'd think it's going to be the same. But every lab is just, you know, they're cut slightly differently, they're stained slightly differently. How easy is it to use the same approach in different labs, and does your approach actually cut through all that and mean that it will always be accurate even if people are doing slightly different preps?
Actually before I talking about that, I would like to say we are in a very remarkably changing era of pathology AI pathology and analyzing research. So because in recent 2 years we have a new technology called foundation models. That means the foundation model is based on those big company just invest a lot of money and collect a very big cohort to without any annotation. It just ask the model to pre-training on that to help the model have a very strong background knowledge about pathology images. So they assume that kind of model can give us the much better feature extractor. So as you just mentioned, when different group, a different team just would like to, when they are going to apply some AI model to deal with their specific cohort and different staining and different background, different disease, right? They just assume that foundation model. So the seller of this foundation model just say, oh, our foundation model is superpower. And you can directly using our foundation model based feature extractor to directly using on your cohort. And they just assume their foundation model has already saw every type, most of the type of the pathological images, including IHC and H&E staining.
So does that mean that there'll be some kind of convergence of people doing this? Because it's another feature would be that, I mean, you've done this very nice job on these particular cancers. But there'll be other people reproducing this in different universities across, or companies across the globe. So, but it sounds like we don't need hundreds of different models. We probably just need one really good one.
So, but the realistic problem is that although they're just testing their foundation model on about 10 sub downstream tasks, and to approve their foundation model's performance is super good. But when we tested them on our private data set, it still have some problem. It still have some bias may occur because all these foundation models, although they just collect a very big cohort, but this data from that cohort is all based on one hospital or one location. And all these samples are focused on very few type of the cancer. So that means they have some very strong potential bias behind them. Is the real situation is not like is not such optimized as they said.
That sounds okay. I can imagine that happening because whoever is doing it, they can't be completely comprehensive.
Yeah.
But the community, I suppose, is there'll be people that are interested in particular rare cancers or different populations.
They need to fine tune their model.
Okay. And so, I guess the other question is, can people share these models in a way that allows it to be developed as a community, or does everybody have to develop their own model?
Yeah, so basically all these foundation models, most of them have already been shared their weight. They are not shared the original image. They just share the trained weight of all these models and help the other people to use for extractor features on their own cohort. So, but as you just mentioned, for some rare cancer, for some rare cases, we still need to fine tune the models on our specific tasks. So that means these papers, the algorithm proposed by these papers can play a very big role in that, because in this paper, we can fine tune the features from both slice level and tile level.
Great. Well, it sounds like a really big step forward. And I had a few follow-up questions really about, its use. So, in terms of cancer, so you clearly got a kind of a method for addressing molecular diversity, and that's manifest as structural changes or ultracellular changes that ultrastructural changes rather that but at least that somehow the molecular diagnostics map onto the what you're seeing on the slide.
Mm-hmm.
In an inflammatory disease, which you know a lot of people are interested in around here, where it's a precancerous state potentially, but there's no transformation. Do you think that would also be a good template for this sort of approach, where you've got a range of different features that you could explore and come up with something that look more like a molecular diagnosis? I think this is something that people are also trying to understand in some detail.
Yeah, I think it's applicable because this algorithm just proposed is very in general, and it can be used into every circumstance and include something like you just mentioned, the try to figure out how is the progress of the inflammatory disease will be, what kind of mechanism may cause some more serious disease, what kind of mechanism may cause the healing of of that disease. For example, in the next step, for this paper, we think the performance on the occurrence side is already good enough for us. Actually, is most of them, from the perspective of the statistic, is even better than human sometimes. But the problem always appeared in the interpretability side. So that means, could we just always get a stable and a reliable interpretable output from all these AI models? And what kind of interpretability technology is the best for us? For now, we only rely on the mechanism called attention. The attention is just very simply tell us which region is more important. Actually, they cannot describe the interaction between different cells or some behavior of the, like, immunity behavior or some inflammatory behavior, or some, it cannot describe more complicated mechanism in the microenvironment. For example, some immune cells just trying to attack the tumor cells, something like that. It cannot detect that. It just tell us which area is more important for prediction. So maybe for the next step, maybe we should think about how to develop a better interpretability technology.
Now that sounds brilliant. So that you could not only define areas which are essentially of giving you maximum value, but also what is the information in there and what's that's telling you about the underlying process. So that sounds very exciting. So what is your practical next step? So you got the thing published, congratulations. What are you going to do now?
So just as I said, a very recently new work I have conducted is about to test the stable of the interpretable output of those foundation models. We just found a very interesting phenomenon that is, for example, we tested two foundation models. They just show us very similar occurrency performance, but actually the attention moving behavior. So for example, when they're trying to transfer some knowledge from their pre-trained state to the specific tasks, the attention will moving from some area to another area. That means for that foundation model, in their understanding, if they want to accomplish that downstream task, they think that area is much more important than the others. But the attention moving behavior actually shows completely different in different foundation models. So although they even can give us the same performance on occurrency. So that means when we're trying to checking the expandable result, which one we need to believe, right? That's just raised us a very dangerous
concern. I think this would be people's general concern about these AI models, is it because it's kind of a black box.
Yeah.
You don't really know what's going on. And so it's quite hard as a clinician where you want to make important diagnostic decisions to rely on something where you don't really know how the data is being generated.
Yeah. So that's the thing. So in the recent work, I just have that proof of concept and have that kind of test. And we just find that dangerous situation, but we still don't know where is the reason to cause that heterogeneous of the interpretable result from different foundation models. And we also don't know how to try to solve that. We still need to invest more time maybe in future to do that.
Well, that's a usual conclusion for many papers, whether it's computational or experimental, is that more work is needed. So that's probably a good place to stop. But thank you very much for that explanation. And it's certainly an exciting area. And I know Jens's group is doing amazing work. So people need to watch this space. And we'll continue through the network to try and promote spatial biology, because it's really got so much to offer to such a range of immunologists around the place. So we're really grateful for you to come along.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much to have me here. Yeah, it's quite an honor to expand my work here. Yeah, thank you.